The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Scott, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, brother?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Pete.
I really appreciate you giving us the time to have a chat to you today, because your story is quite it's quite a story, you know, and my heart goes out to you and your family and for everything that you've been through and are going through, and for the information that you're sharing and what you're doing now in the world to help educate people in so many areas of the health system, and if we want to call it the health system, I'd love for you to take us through your story to help educate people about what you've learned about the system at large, and how best to potentially navigate the situation that we find ourselves in.
So, I mean, I can start with the end in mind. You know, the system at large, I've concluded, is totally corrupt and totally bought. It's become an extension of the government. So, you know, Grace's death woke me up to that beforehand. Of course, if I would have known this, Grace would be alive today, because I would have never admitted her to the hospital. You know, I admitted her to the hospital essentially as a safety precaution. And, you know, that unless you have personally vetted the hospital ahead of time, that should never be done. A hospital has historically been looked at as a safe zone. And I don't know when this happened. I mean, COVID obviously exposed it. But when did it actually happen that these hospitals became arms of the government? I'm not sure. I haven't dug into it that much. I'm really looking at going forward and sharing the story, because unless people's beliefs change relative to what's happening, they don't have a chance, and they're going to have their little buddies die just like my little buddy died. And, you know, she didn't die. She was murdered. Grace was my best buddy. Grace was 19 years old. She had Down syndrome, and she was super high functioning. She did everything with us. She deer hunted with me. She drove a car. My wife homeschooled her so she could read and write. She was a geography whiz. So, I mean, people think about people with Down syndrome, they don't realize they have all kinds of potential if you just let them if you just let them live. You know, God blinded us to Grace's Down syndrome is the bottom line. And so we just never looked at her as that way. We just looked at her as the sky is the limit. And truly the sky was the limit with my little buddy. And, you know, on top of that, she, you know, she did something that I can't do. You know, I was thinking about this morning. The last couple of days have been a little bit sadder than most. You know, there's a lot of ebb and flows with emotions, but, you know, this was on my heart this morning. I just thought, you know, when Grace was first born and, you know, up through the first couple of years, I would cry at times because I would think she's never going to experience the things that I experienced because she has this disability. And as she grew and I saw what she could do that I couldn't do, which the main thing is she loves unconditionally, or she loved unconditionally. She had a love for, she represented God's love the way we're supposed to. And she had a love for him that was the best I've ever seen. She called me earthly dad. But anyway, you know, as you know, so at the beginning of her life, I would get sad thinking she's never going to experience certain things. And as she progressed and I saw how she functioned, I thought, boy, I wish I had Down syndrome. That's how much she influenced me. And she, yeah, she was a big deal for us. Our whole life was circled around her. And, you know, once she was gone, it's hard to, you know, God knew it would light a fire in me to become a full-time advocate. That's what I do now. All I'm doing is advocating. I still legally own a business, but I have my guys so that I could do this. I'm doing interviews, a lot of them. I've done about 400 in the last year. And, you know, on top of the interviews, there's research. And, you know, toward the end of the interview, I can talk about the current research that I'm doing so that people can see the doors that this has opened up. But, you know, just to get you into the story, this was, the setting is October of 2021. We were following the FLCCC protocol. Grace had never been vaccinated. So we felt fully confident that once we got COVID, assuming we got COVID, we'd just walk right through it. And, you know, so why Grace went to the hospital is because we were following that protocol. And I don't want you to get the impression I'm throwing them under the bus here, but that protocol became a substitution for following the corrupt white coats. You know, so we already knew, you know, this jab was no good. We knew remdesivir was no good. And so you start getting a perception, you know, the medical profession, you know, I would have had a healthy distrust for them before. I knew a hospital isn't a place to get well. But the FLCCC protocol told us specifically to get a pulse ox, which is the little oxygen meter for your finger. And so we did. And there's nothing wrong with getting one of those. But the problem is, once you start measuring, that becomes your God. And so what they said in the protocol is that if that number, the oxygen saturation number, goes below 94%, go to the emergency room and admit yourself to the hospital. So on October 6th, Grace was at 88 and 89%. And, you know, the problem was, is we didn't own a pulse ox before. If we would have owned a pulse ox before, you know, Grace just had a cold. That's how we saw it. I mean, she wasn't sick. She just had a cold. But, you know, we're monitoring this oxygen like a, you know, like a God. And, you know, this is maybe the biggest take-home message, is don't let anything be your God other than the one true God. Because if you do, you're going to fall trapped to all kinds of things. And, you know, we fell trapped to this. So, you know, if we would have had one of these for Grace's whole life, every time she got a cold or flu, if we would have monitored it and charted it, then we'd see, I'm guessing that would have been normal for Grace. So then we would have, of course, never taken her into the hospital. But ultimately, we did take her to the emergency room. They recommended checking her in for 3-4 days, putting her on oxygen and a steroid, and she'd be fine. So we thought, well, that seems like a good preventative measure. And if they would have only done that, Grace would be alive today. And I know that with 1,000% certainty, because 3 days after Grace died, I ended up in a different hospital and I just about died. and they turned me around in 24 hours, but they did not sedate me. They proactively treated me versus reactively treated me. So they got me on budesonide, which is a steroid for your lungs. They did that right away. Just their whole attitude was one of, you know, we're here to help you and serve you, versus the other hospital where Grace was murdered at. Their attitude was, we've been doing this for 2 years. We know what we're doing. We don't need your we don't need you butting in. It was just an entire disrespectful attitude versus the hospital I went into was, I would say you couldn't be further apart. It was 180 degrees different. And I credit them for saving my life. So, you know, as we move forward, you know, there was a number of things that were terrible relative to the care. At the time, I just saw it as bad care. I was with Grace in the room, and which is pretty rare. You know, people were not allowed in the room with their loved ones, but because Grace had Down syndrome, I insisted that I'd stay with her. And they had a meeting relative to that request, and after 2 hours decided that it would be fine if I stayed. Well, that only lasted. So, you know, October 6th was the first day. On the morning of October 10th, the head nurse came in with an armed guard and said, you need to leave immediately. And so I was escorted out that day by an armed guard. We had to hire an attorney to get my daughter Jessica in as a replacement advocate, which we did. There was a period then of 44 hours where Grace didn't have anybody in the room with her. And, you know, other than the nurses, which is sporadic at best, what they did during that 44 hours is they started sedating Grace the day before I left the hospital. But then they increased the dose of the sedation med 7 times. While we didn't have coverage. So, I mean, they chose to sedate my little buddy instead of taking care of her. And as we move forward to Grace's last day, and, you know, there's lots of stories like this. None of them are exactly the same. Most of them are not as egregious as Grace's, but I've been, I'm aware of many stories that are substantially worse than Grace's. Most of the stories zero in on remdesivir and ventilators, because those were the two major tools that hospitals were given financial incentives for by the government to follow during they're still doing it today because the public health emergency was re-upped on January 11th, but they're paid incentives to follow these protocols. Well, in Grace's case, they never offered remdesivir, which I said earlier, we were wise to that. And we turned down the ventilator request 5 different times. And the ventilator request was for a pre-authorization to put Grace on a ventilator. She never needed a ventilator. And I will tell you, nobody on COVID needs a ventilator. It isn't that ventilators are never a tool, but they are not a tool for COVID. It doesn't fit the crime. And, you know, so they were pushing the ventilator because of the $300,000 payday if we would have agreed to put Grace on a ventilator. Then Grace would have simply not died on October 13th. She would have died, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, because the ventilator would have kept her alive for the money. So anyway, Grace died from 3 different things. I'm going to walk through those 3 things that took her out. And these are things to be aware of because they're happening. They have convinced the medical profession under the spirit of collectivism, which means the good of the state is more important than the good of the individual. So the individual in this case doesn't matter. It matters, we don't have, you know, they bought into this belief we don't have enough care to go around. And so we've got to triage patients. And the patients who are not productive members of society need to go first. Yeah, this is sick stuff. I mean, but I've done all the, Pete, I've got at this point, well over 2,000 hours of research into this. You know, so what I'm telling you isn't just a dad spouting off. I mean, I've got this all documented on Grace's website, multiple papers that I've written on this topic, because I want people to wake up to realize what's happening. So anyway, as we get into Grace's last day, the day started with a phone call from the doctor with my wife, Cindy, and I at home asking us for the 5th time for this pre-authorization for a ventilator. We said no. And then he immediately switched gears and said, well, Grace had such a good day yesterday. we should work on nutrition. So it's shocking.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.